Tonight I want to address a challenging subject. What do you do when things are not going the way that you're certain they should, and though you've cried out to God, nothing is changing? This is not a speculative question, it's not abstract, it's a real life question. I have spent time with many people who are dealing with this question every day. And many of you in here have spent time with people facing that, haven't you? Some of you in here are facing the same question right now. In your life right now, you are facing circumstances that you wish were different, and though you've prayed, nothing's happening. And if you don't know someone who's been through that, and if you yourself aren't there now, let me tell you that there will be a time in every one of our futures where we will face circumstances that are different than we wish they were. And we will have asked God to change it, and it will seem like nothing is happening. And the question is, what do you do then? Let me say why we're going to address this tonight. Back in October, at the end of the month, we were derailed as our church was shoved out of the place where we were meeting week after week. And with that change of venue, we were meeting in a movie theater, came a decision on my part to stop the sermons that I was preaching. At that point, I was in the middle of a series called The World in Divine Focus. I was looking at the lessons that come to us from the minor prophets. These are little, very short little books right in the middle of the Bible, written by men who believed that they had a unique vision for looking at the world through God's eyes. And then they were sharing those words with his people to encourage and equip them and challenge them. And when we were asked to leave the theater, I stopped preaching that series, and there were things that I needed to address to this congregation. And for these last months, I've been doing that. I have to say, I've been very excited to do that. It's been a very life-giving experience for me to preach without that plan, to go week by week, and I've been glad to do that. But I decided a few weeks back that I would return to the series. And that means that tonight we're in the book of Habakkuk, a very small book with three chapters. And I had one idea when I first decided to preach on it, what I would talk about, but I've read the book a bunch of times this week, which didn't take long. Again, it's just three short chapters. And it became very plain to me that the theme lifted in that book is a real theme that a lot of people have questions about. What do you do when life is not as you think it ought to be? And I don't mean just in petty little things. I mean things that you're pretty sure God would want. And you ask God over and over to do it, but nothing changes. What then? We're going to let the prophet Habakkuk give us the beginnings of an answer. It won't be that all of your questions in this regard are cleared up tonight, but this will be a beginning. And so, without any more of my words, let's turn first to the first chapter of Habakkuk, and we're going to go through all three chapters and just take one verse from each and look what we see there. Now, the book opens with a description of what it is. It's an oracle that has been given to this man, Habakkuk, and we don't know anything about him. He may be old, he may be young. But his first words to us are instructive. Verse 2 reads like this, and this is the prophet. O Lord, how long shall I cry for help and you will not listen? That's how the book starts. The situation that this person faced, Habakkuk, was particular. He was asking this question out of real life circumstances. He was not speculating like so many armchair philosophers sitting in a comfortable coffee shop with a $6 drink, wondering why the world's so difficult. Do you know what I mean? Or some super smart professor in a very comfortable academic setting, earning a high salary and puzzling over why the world is challenging from this privileged position. Habakkuk was asking this question from real challenges, and here's what they were for him. There was an enemy nearby, the people of Babylon. Maybe you've heard of the Babylonians. In his book, they're called the Chaldeans. They were mighty, and they were fierce, and they had no regard for justice whatsoever. When they wanted something, they just went and took it. They were plunderers. He uses a number of images to describe what they're like. He says their horses are as swift as leopards. They're as fierce as wolves at dusk. He describes them like fishermen. He says, the people of Israel are like fish, and the Chaldeans are like fishermen. They grasp us with their hooks and pull us up. They catch us in their nets. They gather us up in their seines, and they laugh and they rejoice at the abundance of what they get when they take us over. And so Habakkuk looks into a world where there's misery and oppression and violence all around, and Habakkuk asks God to change it. He doesn't just ask, he cries out. Have you ever prayed from the bottom of your soul crying out to God? That's what Habakkuk did. And though he cried, it seemed like nothing was changing. And so he asked, God, how long will I cry and you won't listen? In our own day, I can tell you that there are many situations that people face that make them feel like this. No job, and still the requirements of supporting a family. Loneliness, wanting someone to love and be loved by, but no matter how hard I try, I can't find it. Strife of every kind in families, whether it's conflicts with parents or children or siblings, parents breaking up, children left to fend for themselves in the throes of the challenges that come with divorce. There's abuse that people face. There's depression that vexes folks, anxiety that cripples people. And over again, I've met it in people that I'm close to where situations are different than they wish they were. Sickness, death, loss of every kind. It's not always personal. Sometimes the things that make people ask these questions are much bigger. Let me say a few things and see if this touches a nerve for you. How about war in Syria? Governments killing their own people. An entire globe that's vexed by the terrors of violence. Oppressive governments ruining their own people's lives. Citizenry that stands passive and lets it all happen. Racism, hatred, poverty, sickness and starvation. Why is it like this? And many thoughtful Christians have raised their voice in prayer, whether it's for the big things or the small things that they themselves face. Addiction, any kind of misery that vexes the soul. Some of you know just what I'm talking about. What do you do when you face this? Some people believe that you should never, ever doubt God or say a negative thing to God about how you're feeling. I crossed paths with a fellow a few years back, and he was just a great young man. He had come to faith. He was vibrant and thankful. We had a walk one day in town, and he told me how glad he was to be a Christian. But then he started to share with me about his family and how hard it was in his family. His mom was suffering from an addiction, and it really made things difficult for him. He wondered why it was like that. He had prayed. It wasn't changing. And then he said to me, he let it slip. Christian, sometimes I feel angry at God. And as soon as he said it, he covered it up and said, I know I'm not supposed to feel like that. I should never be mad. I should only be grateful. How could I ever have said that? I told him, no. It's okay to be honest with God about how you're feeling. But he had come to think that it was not okay. And so what he did is what so many Christians who face the situations that Habakkuk here faced, what so many Christians do, which is to pretend or to hide what you're really feeling from yourself and others, and then finally to give up. And I think that's what he did. I think he decided, I can't believe, and so he went away. But the first lesson from Habakkuk here is a very good lesson, and it's simple. And the lesson is this. When you are feeling like God must not be listening, it is absolutely okay to tell God that. That you never need to hide your disappointment from God. You never need to pretend that you're okay with what's happening when you're not okay with what's happening. You never have to act like you just know everything's going to be great and you're glad and you're just happy all the time. You don't have to pretend. With God, you don't. You can tell God exactly what you're feeling, even if it's an accusation against God, which is what this really is. The book starts with the prophet accusing God of not listening to him. God can tolerate it. And that's a beautiful lesson. The book does not end with this statement and then God saying, don't you dare question me. Boom, end of Habakkuk. It doesn't. It unfolds and it goes from there. God responds back. And what you must take to heart, every one of you here, is that when you face challenges like this that make you even question God, you are absolutely invited by God to tell Him. And you don't have to hide it, you can say it. And if you cross paths with someone who's struggling with this, you can encourage them, share it with God. Now that's the first chapter. The first chapter opens with this challenge. I want to move on now to what happens next, and it's quite beautiful. God actually responds. God speaks back to Habakkuk, and his response has two parts. The first part is extremely challenging. The second part is extremely encouraging. I want to start with the first part, the challenging part. Now, I'm not going to read it for you. You can read this on your own. It's so short. Here's what happens. God says to Habakkuk, "You think that I'm not listening to you, and I understand. You think that I'm asleep, but I'm not. You think that I'm doing nothing in these days, but I want you to understand that I am actually still at work." You following me so far? This is good for you to know. Whatever it is that you're facing, whatever the thing is that vexes you tonight, here comes the challenging part, and this is seriously challenging. He says, "If I told you, Habakkuk, how I'm at work right now, it would be so surprising you wouldn't even believe me." And then he says this, "The enemies, the Chaldeans, they are my instrument. You think that I'm not working, but their success right now is my work." Do you see why this is really challenging? There's a part of me that wants to turn away from pictures like this in Scripture. But I have made a decision, and I think it's the decision of every person who says, I'm going to be under God's word. And that is to subject my opinions about God to what the Scriptures teach. And here God says this, "The success of the enemy, the apparent success of the enemy, is a part of my plan." Now, there's a danger, and I want to warn us of this right away. There would be a danger for any one of us to say, okay, that must mean that when I look at my life and things aren't as I wish they were or I think God would want them, I have to just somehow capitulate to the fact that God is the one making all of these bad things in my life happen. And people can press this idea to the deepest conclusions and say that means that everything that happens in the world is caused directly by God. Now, please, listen carefully now. That is not true. It's absolutely untrue. First of all, there are many times when you and I know the right thing to do, the thing that God wants us to do, and we do the opposite anyway. Can I get a witness? Okay? If you or I do that and try to blame God for it, ooh. If God does zap people with lightning bolts, that's a time for it. But when you do the wrong thing, that's not God causing it to happen. It's not. And then, by extension, it would be true that there are things that happen to us that other people do, whether they're small or big, to large communities or individuals, that can't possibly be traced back to God's action. And by the way, Jesus himself teaches along these lines, that it would be wrong to look at every bad thing and try to trace a line back to God's cause. That's not how it works. We don't need to go that far with the lesson of Habakkuk to learn what he wants to teach us. But here's what he wants to teach us. And this is so important. For Habakkuk, it was a surprise to understand that what looked like God's inactivity was in fact God's action still. That should teach you and I to think twice when we look at our circumstances and conclude, because things aren't going as we wish they are or would, that God must be inactive. Sometimes, not always, please understand me, but sometimes God uses loneliness for something good in our lives. Sometimes not having the support of a job is a tool that God means to use. Please understand me, I don't want to say that God's to blame for the challenge that so many people are facing. You know where that really came from? It came from the greed of a lot of people that we're in this place we're in as a culture right now. But still, the challenges that you face, just like the Chaldeans were God's instrument then, may somehow be a part of God's plan still. And that lesson is challenging, but I submit this to you. There's also some encouragement in that, isn't there? Do you know what I mean by that? Let me try to put it like this. If I'm forced to do something by an employer And I don't want to do it, and I don't believe that employer has my best interest in mind. It's a hard thing to do. On the other hand, if I submit myself to a faithful teacher, and that teacher says, here's what you must go through, if I know that teacher loves me, then I can do it. Because I trust that teacher has my best interest in mind. And what Habakkuk did not see yet, which I can tell you, I see, and we see in here, right now, all of us can see this tonight, that the God who sometimes uses instruments that we wish he wouldn't is a God who loves us. From start to finish, loves us entirely and will never stop loving us. Has gone to every length to love us fully. Has indeed given himself in his Son for us to love us. And because of that, I tell you this tonight, you can trust him that when things are not going as you think they ought to and you've prayed to him and nothing is changing, you still can trust. And that's the first challenge of God's response to Habakkuk. There's a second part of it. And this is the part that's all encouragement. After telling him, I'm still at work, God acknowledges that he does understand that Habakkuk does not yet see what God's up to. But God says this to him. I want you to do this, Habakkuk. I want you to write down what I'm about to tell you. A vision. He said, I want you to write it on tablets so big that a person running by could read it. And then in verse 3, this is what God says. Look at it. Chapter 2, verse 3. There is still a vision for the appointed time. It speaks of the end, and it does not lie. If it seems to tarry, wait for it. It will surely come. It will not delay. God says to him, listen, I still have a plan. You don't see it right now, but I've got one. And I tell you what, it's trustworthy. And it's not for now, it's for an appointed time. I know you can't see it now, God says to Habakkuk. I know it looks all murky and difficult for you now, but you trust me. I have a plan and it's there in the future. And I know it will take time. If it seems to tarry, tarry is a word that means if it seems to wait for a long time. If it seems like you're always waiting and nothing is changing. If it seems like it's always one day after another waiting, trust me, God says. At the appointed time, it'll be clear. You'll see it. I'll uncover it for you. Let me ask this. Is there a person in here who for a long while fought with disbelief and anguish and pain because difficult circumstances were there and it seemed like God was not there listening, but at some point he finally showed himself to be trustworthy? Is there a witness in here who's faced that? You have. Some of you face that. I have. I was trapped in misery and darkness for years. And I'll tell you this. I wanted to die. It was so bad. And this is before I knew almost anyone in this room. Wait. Don't give up. There's no reason to give up. There's no reason to give up, not because you have the strength, not because you are going to be clever enough to work your way out of this trouble, not because you're going to find the solution. No, but because God himself has the solution worked out. There's a time when he's going to uncover it fully. Wait. This is the word here. Wait. Maybe it's that you can't resolve a conflict with someone in your family and you want to give up. Wait. Maybe it's because there's a person that you're close to who's not a believer and you want them so badly to come to faith and a part of you is saying, give up. It'll never happen. Give up. No, wait. Don't give up. Be patient. Hang in there. Maybe it's that you look at yourself and you hate what you see. You're ashamed of who you are. You think of your past and that's all you can see in the present and you just want to give up because you're ashamed of this person that you've become. Don't give up. Wait. God has a vision. It's out there. And it's so good. And if it seems to take a long time, don't give up. That's the word that God gives to Habakkuk. I can tell that God is giving that to some of you now. Let it sink into your heart. Please, don't give up. God is trustworthy and good. Wait. We have Habakkuk saying, how long are you not going to listen? We have God saying, wait, trust me. That's chapter 2. There's a third chapter in the book. And this is the last chapter, and it's the chapter where Habakkuk responds to God's call for him to wait. It's the nature of this last chapter that makes it so powerful for me. It's not a series of ideas. It's not a bunch of propositions about God. Do you know what the third chapter of Habakkuk is from start to finish? Anyone? It's a prayer. It's a prayer. How long will I cry out and you won't listen? That's what the prophet says. God says, trust me, I'm at work still, even in ways that would surprise you. Now, trust me, there's a future. And then what that makes Habakkuk do is pray. He just prays. And this is the best advice that I could possibly give any one of you who right now are in a place that makes you say, how long will I cry out and you won't listen? Pray. And I have to say, I know that can be hard, especially when it's been hard and you've been praying. I once, in that time when I was in that deep darkness of mine, I was once at a friend's house and a bunch of guys were chatting about life. They were all laughing about how great their lives were. I was sitting there hating them all because I had a hard time. And I raised it in an abstract way. You know, what if life isn't so great? What do you do? And one of my friends said, well, you pray. And he was smoking a cigar at the time. I wanted to take the cigar out of his hand and press it into his forehead. I didn't do that, all right? I don't want to just say pray. I want you to see the way Habakkuk prays. Look at the second verse of chapter 3 and you'll see it. And this is a model for us. And you notice that we didn't have time of silence tonight. That's because after I'm done, we're going to spend some time in silence. And you yourself are going to pray. This is how Habakkuk prays. O Lord, I have heard of your renown and I stand in awe. O Lord, of your works. In our own time, revive it. In our own time, make it known. I want to stop there. Listen, he starts out by saying, God, I've heard about the good things you've done in the past. I know. I know about your renown. Renown means your fame based on the reputation that you've built for yourself by doing things. I know the work that you've done, Habakkuk says. And then he asks, in our own time, that means right now, even as I know I've been waiting, now still I want to pray. In our own time, revive it. That means bring it back to life. Make it known. That means do the work that you did before in such a way that people know it was you who did it. What's the work that he prays for? Now, I want to be clear here. Habakkuk doesn't just pray for everything and anything. He asked God to do the kinds of things God had done in the past. The work that made God famous. Let me do this quickly. Now listen. The work that God had done in the past. There's at least three things that stand out in the history of Israel. God's powerful work to help people. Now, I'm going to ask you for help now. I need some participation from you. Who knows of a powerful event where God acted for the people of Israel in the past that's very, in their life, famous? Help me. Exodus. Parting of the sea. Exactly. So good. Listen. All of God's people in Habakkuk's day, when they were asked, who's God? The first thing they would say is, he's the one who delivered us from Egypt. Please listen now. This should shape your understanding of what you're meant to pray for. The people were oppressed. They were slaves in Egypt. They couldn't experience life at all. They couldn't use the gifts that they had to pursue real and true life because there were people who were oppressing them and imprisoning them. And they cried out to God, and God freed them. God is the God who redeems people from the bondage that they're into sin, from the bondage that they're into disbelief, from the bondage that they're into their past mistakes or their present habits. God is the God who uses his power to free people. And Habakkuk here is saying, God, I know you're that kind of God. Do it again. Free again. A second event, after God freed them from Egypt, where were they? Someone help me. The wilderness for how long? 40 years. And was it easy there? No. They lived in a desert. The physical hardship they faced is beyond what a lot of us can imagine. They didn't have the water they needed or the food they needed, and they didn't know where they were going, and it was dark and frightening. And what God did for them there was he sustained them. He guided them in the dark. He gave them the things they need to make it day by day. And some of you right now are in a desert. And what you need is enough to get you through today. And then tomorrow you're going to need it again. You need enough food, enough water, enough of God's presence to guide you on to the next step. Well, listen, that's who God is. God is the one who not only frees from bondage, but sustains in the wilderness by giving people the provisions that they need to make it. You pray for it. Ask him to do that again. Say, I'm in a desert, sustain me. There's one more thing that was definitely in the historic imagination of God's people in Habakkuk's day. After God freed them and brought them to the wilderness, did they stay forever in the wilderness? No, where did they go? The promised land. I'm very glad you know this. Now listen, in order to get there, they faced enemies that were way too strong for them. They faced enemies that on their own strength they never could have defeated. That if they only had to go with their own might, these enemies, these forces, these powers would have totally destroyed them. And the fact is, Many of you hearing my voice right now, you are facing enemies that you do not have the strength to overcome. You don't. If you had to go on your own might, you would be bowled over by them. But God is the defender of the weak. God is the one who comes beside you and will fight for you, who will stand at your side against the enemies that vex you, whether they're addictions or some kind of psychological oppression or whatever it is, the circumstances that you face. If they're too strong for you, then you ask God to defend you and fight for you. That's the work of God. He's the one who frees, he's the one who sustains, and he's the one who defends. And what we learn here from this beautiful beginning of this prayer from Habakkuk is that when we're facing challenges that we can't overcome, that when we're stuck in the dark and we've asked over and over again and nothing is coming of it, that we must listen to the possibility that God is still at work even though we can't see it. And then we must trust that we can wait. There'll be a day when he makes it plain. And then finally, we can and should pray. And what we should pray for is very simply, God, I know you're one who frees. Do it again. I know you're one who sustains. Do that in our own time. I know you're the defender of the weak. Defend now. Now, on the edges of all of the pews, there are, on the far right side, a little stack of white paper. And I want to ask each person who's sitting on one of the ends to find that stack. They look like this. And I want whoever's sitting on the end to pass them down with the pens. I want each person to take a paper like this. On the top there is the word that the prophet prays. And what is going to be there in the center is your prayer. I want each of you, having heard this text, having felt the Spirit move you, think, what is it that God's asking me to pray for now? If it's for a friend that you're close to who is oppressed or who needs sustaining power or needs defense from God, then pray for that person and write it down here. If it's you yourself, write it down. Now, before you start to write, please let me tell you what we're going to do with these. There's going to be a time of silence now where the musicians lead us in some reflective music. Musicians, take time to write if you want before you start to play. But we're going to collect these after 5 minutes of silence and music. If you don't want yours to be collected, that's okay. But I'm going to collect these for this purpose. There's going to be two things that we're going to do with them. One is these are going to be prayed for this week by all of the groups that pray. And the second thing is I'm going to form our prayers as a church for the future, next week when we gather and the week after that, from the things that this community is praying for. Because this is the last word I want to share with you. Habakkuk never had to face those challenges by himself because he was a part of the people of God. And there is not a single person in here who has to face what they're facing alone if this community chooses to be what it's meant to be. Every church is meant to be the community that gathers up in its own life those who are weak and those who are strong and moves along before the Almighty God who delivers, before the Almighty God who frees and who guides. So now let the Spirit guide you as you pray. And when we're done, there's going to be a time where we sing and then the plates will be passed and we'll gather up these prayers.